there's no time wasted watching film with guys. They gotta learn.
On today's episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we're joined by Coach Blake Cochran, the head coach at Clarendon College. Coach Cochran worked his way up through assistant roles at McMurray University, Southwestern Assemblies of God, Fort Scott Community College, and Northwestern State before earning head coaching opportunities at Fort Scott and now Clarendon. His path reflects steady growth, added responsibility, and preparation at every stop. In this episode, we discuss how he earned more responsibility as a young assistant, what he did to prepare for his first head coaching role as an assistant, and a defensive takeaway built around three different levels of paint touches. Please welcome to the podcast, Blake Cochran. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome back, coaches, to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Today, we're joined with a Rising Coaches member and the current head coach, Clarendon College, Coach Blake Cochran. Coach Cochran, welcome to the podcast.
What's going on, guys? Good morning. Excited to be here, and thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Appreciate your membership, too, man. Means a lot, all your support. We know you've been a part of this a long time, so we definitely don't take that for granted. Much appreciated.
Absolutely. No doubt.
No, I want to say one great thing, especially is I know you're a young coach still. And there's still a lot going forward for you, but you've had great experiences and great success so far as an assistant, as a head coach. So there's definitely a lot of things that people can learn from. But really, just to go back, ultimately, in the beginning of it, being an assistant coach, I know you had multiple stops as an assistant before your previous, I should say, your current and previous head coaching positions. But just talk about, one, being the assistant, really, how do you be the best assistant for somebody? I know you were at McMurray, Southwestern, Assemblies, God University, Fort Scott Community College, Northwestern State. So you've had some great experiences, some great universities. But like, how as an assistant, one, how do you be the best assistant for a head coach? And two, how do you develop and earn more responsibility as an assistant? Because I feel like that's a tough thing for people to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely, I feel like I didn't do my service great until Northwestern State. When I got to Northwestern State, I just sat there and watched how the program was ran, listened to the assistants for about a month. And I wanted to fill holes that coaching staff didn't have because they've been together for so long. If I would have walked in that door and said, this is what we need to do, this is what they would have been like, all right, calm down. And so I tried to find areas that I'm not saying they didn't have experience in. It's just areas that they couldn't tend to. Everybody's got a lot they're doing on their plates. It was a lot more film sessions I would break down. It was a lot of analytic stuff. And I didn't have great experience in that stuff at that time, but I taught myself how to do it to help our program. And that's how I learned a lot of responsibility from Coach Mike. He's been a head coach for 40 years. The other coaches, we had Coach Dave Simmons. He was a head Division I coach. Those guys have been there and done it a long time. And so my willingness to help them, I think, truly helped me get my responsibility. And I started doing a lot of different stuff there. I did graphics. I started doing scouting reports. I started introducing plays. And I wasn't there very long, but it definitely took me the time to take a step back to move myself forward. And I think a lot of young coaches are just, coach, we need to do this. This is how I need to do it. And it's just not going to work like that.
No, that's so true, man. It's funny. You did what we as coaches always tell the low man on the weak side to do is look for work. Right? Like yeah, you always tell that guy that's on the weak side. You're the farthest fifth guy. You're the farthest away from the ball. Don't chill. Look for work. Yeah. You can blow something up. You can chuck somebody. But you basically took that approach to when you got to Northwestern State. It's like, all right, as you see the rhythm of how things are run in any program, you know, if you're really paying attention, you can, and then if you have willing assistance like you had to help you, then there'll be three or four things that you can eventually hang your hat on. But it's great that you had guys like that, that weren't territorial, that weren't trying to wall you off or anything like that. So to be able to allow them to pull you in and say, hey man, this would really help if you could do this. And then after that's all you need, right? Then you just take off running at that point. And like the Patriots used to say in their facility, I don't know if they still have it, but they had the do your job thing. But another front office motto they had is the reason why so many people internally got promoted. Used to say, the more you can do, the more you can do.
Right.
That was their deal.
So true.
If you could hustle as a draft assistant or something, next thing you're like assistant GM 5 years later, because you've just been that beast in the draft room, and it started just bringing people coffee. and then you're printing stuff off, and then so all of a sudden 5 years later the guy's like assistant GM. But that was their internal front office motto, is the more you can do, the more you can do. So you basically took that and ran with it, which is cool.
Yes, sir.
I never understood that more until I actually was at the point where I'm able to start delegating a little bit. When you start hiring other coaches, and then it's like you're able to delegate some things, and then because before somebody delegates something to you, you do it and you're like, all right, but I want something big, especially as a young coach. I'll be the first one to say, I wanted something big. I wanted that grand slam. And then you got to start realizing you got to get on base before you can hit a grand slam, right? You got to have guys around single on first, second, third before you can go for the fence. So it's, you got to be able to do those little things. I never really understood that until I was able to start delegating it. That's great. But so like ultimately what you're saying is you were more a fly on the wall, just be in the quiet mind, listening, what else do they need, kind of take in what everybody needs, and then we're able to try and fill in the gaps from there.
Yeah, 100%. And we practice in the morning, and we had some international players that needed some extra work. I would even, Coach Mike would call me, hey, can you bring them up here in the weight room at 5 a.m.? Can you shoot with them at 5 a.m.? Yeah, I'll do it. And then I started, I told him, I know Dave Love, the shooting coach, he used to be with the Magic and stuff. We would FaceTime him with some of our players, and then he started realizing I had some great connections. I coached for the top Adidas team in Texas, so it was not only can Blake work guys out, but he's able to have recruiting connections, but then he's doing scouting reports and doing film and showing film with our players that people weren't doing before. And so that's kind of where I put my time versus let's coach, I want to sit down and help you with practice plans, because those guys have 80 years of head coaching experience. They don't need my help with that stuff in. They need my help working guys out and showing them film. They're not doing that stuff on a daily basis. Yeah, just being a fly, and you just got to take your seat back, and you can't be prideful in this profession, especially at that level. If you're prideful and you try to show people up and stuff like that, then people will tune you out so quickly. It's not even funny.
You just hit on something big, man. Time with players is never wasted. And so when you, as a young coach, everything you just mentioned had to do with players, like working guys out, spotting guys in the weight room, showing guys film, right? Like that time spent with players, I just don't think you can ever go wrong when you're doing that. And John Calipari, I heard him in a clinic like 30 years ago, and the phrase always stuck with me, is that if you take care of the players, you'll always have a job.
Right.
And it was just an interesting, approach, but it's almost like a good reminder for all of us. You've been in it 2 years or 22 or 52. Players should always be the center of the universe in terms of what we're trying to do. And because without them, what the hell? What do we got nothing to do? You're not even, there is no us without them. They should always be the focus in terms of that. I hope people, when this drops and they're tuning in, really pull from that, because that's a big one.
Yeah.
Especially for young coaches.
I agree.
Then off of that too, like you're trying to get more responsibility. You're trying to get your foot in more. You're trying to show that you can do the little things. But then you also, as a selfish behalf, like you have to try and find a way to better yourself and be able to prep yourself for when that position comes, when you're in the seat that you're in. Mm-hmm. As an assistant, do you really remember or recall many of the things that you had did as an assistant to help prep you for the opportunity as a head coach? Was there anything maybe little that you did?
Yeah, through the working out and the film sessions, like I just built really good relationship with our players. And Coach Mike knew Blake, like this is Blake's guys because he spends time with them. They'll listen to him. So it's he would call me, hey, you need to call him and talk about why he's not doing his homework. And it's just building that relationship, taking that to getting my head coaching position. After Northwestern State, I had a couple opportunities, State Division One. But I was ready to take that leap. And so when I did that, I was very young. And I knew if I just came in there into practice and was yelling the whole time and didn't spend time with them, like same thing as me as an assistant. If I did that immediately, they would have tuned me out, those coaches. If I do that as a young head coach, those guys are going to tune me out. And so I try to spend a lot of time with those guys that first year. Watching a ton of film, and I still watch a ton of film with our players. I just think there's no time wasted watching film with guys. They've got to learn.
Yeah. Especially your point guards. You know, it's almost like the thing that John Gruden used to do where he'd have quarterbacks. ESPN used to have that show when Gruden would sit down with different quarterbacks and have a little mini film session. I forget what it was called, but it was like a little 30-minute show, and John Gruden used to do it. I thought it was really good. When did you start? Because everybody that wants to become a head coach eventually has to do this. And it's a great, I don't know, exercise or looking in the mirror thing to do. But when did you feel like you started really putting your own head coaching philosophy together? Because you can have your beliefs as an assistant in terms of the way you like to do things. But that's a whole different thing altogether when you're saying this is from A to Z. This is how I'd like my program to look. So when did you really start to really think about that?
When I got promoted to my first year at Northwestern State, I was just player development. And like I said, I spent all that time helping the program as much as I could. I got promoted to assistant that next year. And I was, I think, the fourth youngest Division I assistant in the country. And through that year of doing scouting reports and stuff like that, we were playing Gonzaga. We were playing Washington State. We were playing Houston. LSU, and so after watching those games and showing our team and coach, hey, we got a deep paint touch, we're getting kickouts, that's when we're getting high percentage shots. It led to, we played Gonzaga, and we scored 60 points, and that was the most points Gonzaga has given up at home in 20 or 30 years or something. And so through learning more through film of showing our team, our coaches, that's when I started realizing, like, this is what can success. It doesn't matter here. It doesn't matter wherever. And that's when I started. I built, like, a booklet throughout the season at Northwestern State, just whenever that time was going to come on how I wanted my program, the first meeting, the first PowerPoint. I already had all that stuff ready. So it wasn't when I got the job at Fort Scott in June, I wasn't scrambling. What am I going to do? I knew from day one what I was going to do.
No, everybody's got to do that, man. It's one of the, I remember same thing, being an assistant. I was at Ohio State, and I just remember it was like a 3 or 4 days. I'd get home. It was late summer after recruiting before school started. And I took a 3 or 4 day deal, and again, I was more of a legal pad and like organic guy, but it was just stuff everywhere on my kitchen table for 3 or 4 days. Wow. But the clarity you get when you come out of that, it's pretty cool because you don't feel wishy-washy as much as you used to. And you have a peace about how you want to approach things. It's not, like you said, if you'd got that job and never thought about it, that's a whole different, it's helter-skelter. If you're ready, it's still helter-skelter. So if you get it and then you haven't thought about that stuff, that's a whole different deal altogether. That's like the guys in Home Alone 2 with the pigeons. They get the bird seed all over them and the pigeons attack them in the park. That's that feeling.
Great movie.
Talk about not being ready.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a great reference.
Talk about not being ready. But the fact that you did that, I hope people listening again take the headline of just, man, preparation. You try to tell subs, be ready for the moment that you don't know is coming.
Yeah.
And that's literally what you did getting ready to be a head coach. Same thing.
Yeah. And I think at the same time, too, while you're doing that, you don't need to be thinking about the future. You've got to be where your feet are. I wasn't just, I'm ready for March to get here so I can start applying for all these head coaching positions. You typically aren't going to get one of those positions if you don't have a relationship anyway. So you have to be where your feet are. And I think that's just as important too.
No doubt. Absolutely.
Yeah. And one of the best things that you said it yourself, I'm just going to reiterate it, but those relationships you build, especially, yeah, you got to be able to have no coaches, but then it's hard to get hired by a coach because you're going for a head coaching position. Now, yeah, obviously if somebody leaves, they can get you in there, but the ADs, those are the people that ultimately are doing the hiring, or people in the athletic department. Those are the kind of relationships you got to build. And it's hard to be able to meet those kind of people if you're not in front of them in any way. So yeah, even getting out into events, different ways to be able to meet those people would be great.
Right.
Yeah.
No doubt. So let me ask this. Now, this is gonna dig into it a little bit.
Yeah.
You start that first head coaching position. We're going to talk about that first year, Fort Scott Community College. Yeah, you're back to a place where you've been before, so it's not like it's foreign land to you.
Right.
But that first year as a head coach, looking back on it, was there anything that you knew you were ready for? And then on the flip side, anything that you were like, this I was not prepared for. I should have been a little bit better at this.
Yeah, definitely. The biggest thing I was prepared and ready for is I had so many contacts in Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I played on Darren Williams' AAU team, so I still had a lot of connections amongst them. Southern Assault, one of my buddies coaches for Houston Hoops. Like, I've got nuggets all over Texas, and people want to go play in the Jayhawk. And so we had a lot of talent that first year at Fort Scott. But now being said, I wasn't as prepared as I thought I was after timeouts. And I thought we had good stuff, but I could have made better adjustments, whether it's offense, defense. You've got to keep people on their toes. And I thought, this is the way we're going to do it. And if you guys do it successfully, we don't have to make any adjustments. But it yeah, doesn't work like that.
They probably didn't do it successfully.
Yeah, exactly. And you can't just watch Twitter and, hey, I'm going to run this play, this is going to work for us. You don't know what kind of ball screen covers they're going to run after a timeout. You don't know where they're tagging off the ball screens. You don't know where the help's coming from. And so I was more so unprepared for those situations than I would have liked to be. And
I totally relate to that, man. It's funny, but you really don't know until you go through it too. One little thing I like to nudge the head coaches in here, especially people in their first, second years, there's never another year one. So you got to go through year one to know that there's never another, because you're so different that second year being a head coach after the first year. And I don't have kids, but all my friends that have them, they talk about that first year of parenting. Like, you can read all the books you want. You can watch all the videos you want. You can listen to everybody saying, this is how the best way to be a parent is this. Yeah. That's great. Till they're yours, it's a whole different ball game. So you got to, some of that stuff, like you said, it's just the maturity curve of being a head coach, man. Those are part of just taking the lumps.
Yeah, no, to your point. So it's funny you said that, actually, because one of the things when we were talking about, or when you were saying how you can see a play on Twitter and then you can try and put it into your team. Last night we had a player at 999 points. We're like, all right, we got to get him one bucket. Let's draw up a play. My coach shows me, he goes, this is what we're going to run. And he pulls it up and it's Wisconsin versus Nebraska. And he starts laughing. He goes, now, before you look at this, I hope we run it anything like they did.
Right.
I don't know if we're going to be able to run it exactly how they did, but this is what we want to do. Now, go forward. We played last night. Very first play worked exactly to a charm. Kid got it. But it was one of those it was cool to see happen. The help side, it was an empty corner, empty weak side corner. So the whole paint was open. But regardless, no, like, you don't know where all those are going to come. And there's just so much that you have to think about once you actually start diving into it. Like, when I feel like a lot of people are seeing a basketball game and they just see guys running around maybe a little bit of an offense, like people who don't know. And then when you actually dive into it, there's help side, there's strong side coverage. How do we guard this? How do you go to a ball screen? Okay, this guy's going to split the, if you hard hedge every time and you leave a little bit of a gap. There's so many different things that you can narrow down on, and it's tough. But as you, as a head coach, right now you have a little bit more experience. Now you got a little bit more under your belt. Not only have you gone at Fort Scott, but you also have some success over at Clarendon too, where you're at now. Just talk about, like, from that first year to now being where you're at now. Has your philosophy changed? Has your mindset changed? Has your approach on a day-to-day basis changed?
Yeah, definitely. At Fort Scott, we had some really good players. They were all older. They were all transfers. And then that second year, I had some returners that were had success that first year. And we made it to the championship my second year there. And we had the best season in 70 years. And I go to Clarendon in the best junior college conference in the country. And I was just, this is going to work. We just made the championship. And I felt like my first year at Fort Scott was happening all over again. But the good thing is I've been through those adjustments. I learned through in-game stuff like that to where I took over late. Luckily, my assistant from Fort Scott came with me. But the conference is loaded with talent. It's unbelievable. And so we didn't have the talent my first year because we took over so late. And we still beat preseason number one, number two teams in the country. And my philosophy just changed offensively, practice planning to helping those guys learn, you know, what's going to happen if they hard hedge. Like you're saying, we work on that stuff in practice, whether they switch, what we're going to do. If they're chasing down screens, what are we going to do and stuff like that? So we were able to teach them everything in between so they were prepared from the moment we started playing games, and it truly helped us.
Yeah, no, that's funny. Like you guys just mentioned in like Instagram and actions and things like that. Sometimes just having the guys that they have running that play is a big difference as well. Like right. It's not so much, sometimes it's not so much the play, it's the players.
Yeah.
You know? And that typically helps the actions work a little bit better. I spoke at a coaching clinic back in the fall, and I was just really encouraging coaches to develop a culture of shooting in your program.
Yes.
Especially at the high school level. Like make shooting like a cultural thing. In terms of like year round, in the summer, you got your shot making stuff throughout the week, X amount of shots that, you know, made or whatever. But then I said, your plays will probably work a lot better. Guys have the ability to shoot the ball. And that just is what it is. But what would you say, like now you're looking at pin drop yourself right now as a head coach? What would you say, like, all right, as I move forward in the next couple years, what's one thing that you want to improve at? Just looking at yourself in your own development.
I spent all of March Madness, and I would screen record. I've got the biggest Google file of all the March Madness games, like them making adjustments to ball screen coverage and stuff like that. I can do that on the fly. It doesn't matter what a team is doing defensively. I need to get to that point defensively where I'm watching teams, because everyone's watching offense when they're watching games and you get stuck watching it. Okay. But at the same time, you've got to make adjustments defensively. And so when March Madness happens this year, I just want to watch all the adjustments these teams are making to teams that are running stuff, because it's just so easy to get caught. Man, that was such an awesome back. They backdoored the stagger and then he flared the first screener and then he slipped and they got a bug and it's like, we're going to run that. And it's like, but now that's the biggest thing for sure. And I want to go back to what you said about shooting and going through the summer and stuff like that. We had our really dynamic player our first year. He didn't shoot great from three his first year. And in the off season, I spent almost every day, we're just going to break your shooting form and we're going to go back and just go baby steps with it. And he would have probably gone Division I after the first year. He just didn't shoot great. Now, after all of that time, he's shooting 40% from three this year. And when we were running plays, they would just sag off of him. You know what? You're going to run a ball screen and what they're sagging off of him. Now the play that you just drew up is not going to work. now everything opens up. And so I couldn't agree with you more about the shooting stuff and trying to teach and just develop it amongst your culture.
Yeah. I used to tell guys all the time, the courts is only as big as your range.
Yeah.
Right. If you're shooting. And so if you don't shoot it great, you're literally like playing in a backyard garage, like a driveway with a big Oldsmobile 98 parked in the, and so you don't have a whole lot of space to work with.
Right.
Because of your shot limitation.
Yeah.
So the better you shoot it, the bigger the floor you're playing with. Steph Curry basically has half court at his disposal, in a sense, because of his ability to shoot the ball and not just get rid of it quickly, but how far he can shoot it from.
Yeah.
But that's a big one. But I think shooting is certain. There's certain things that are cultural. Defense is cultural, I think. But I also think shooting is a cultural thing too, because that's something that it's part skill, but it's part will as well. Defense is more will, because you don't need to be a great talent to be a great defender. That's a will thing. But shooting is a skill thing that takes will. Because of that, like you just said, with your guy, it takes that level of commitment to try to get it better. You got to, shooting's like shaving, man. You got to do it every day or you look like do it every day. You look like a bum.
I don't know, Mage. I got to say, there's times where I'll hop in the gym and I'll just be feeling it. But it's been,
that's
been a while.
You're stressed.
I don't
know. You're the poor
man's
poor man. That's
a God-given talent right there.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
He just got it like that. He's just one of those guys. He's a unique guy, man. He could.
Especially those drills when we're supposed to be doing rebounding and I'm trying to throw it off the backboard and miss on purpose and I start banking them in and get yelled at for it. But that's a whole different topic. No, but I wanted to ask one question in particular, because I feel like this has not necessarily, I feel like it's something a lot of people have a stigma around, is it's coaching in JUCO in comparison to an NCAA. So now you having the experience, having the time coaching in JUCO, some people may view it from one way or the other, but I know there's, as you said, and even as we all know, like there is tremendous talent in junior college. I know it is growing and it's a huge thing, especially as you said, you're in one of the toughest, if not the toughest conferences in junior college. Just to have it like, talk about coaching from the junior college side in comparison to being in your other roles as an assistant in the NCAA. Is there much of a difference to it? Like, just compare the two, contrast the two for us.
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest difference is you just get so much more time with your guys at the NCAA level, and you've got so much help. You've got 10 to 20 people on a staff typically. But at the junior college level, there's guys that we've played against that are playing at Louisville right now. And there's a guy from our conference that played, he's at Arkansas and stuff like that. There's a guy at Washington. We're playing Power Five guys. And the same thing too is all of the coaches in our conference have coached Division One. And so not only do you have this mix of unbelievable talent across the board, you've got a mix of unbelievable coaches too. And so it's not much difference from a talent and coaching perspective, besides you get so much more time, like you're talking about shooting with your guys, that you can get those guys in the gym all the time. And there's a lot more availability at the university to have online classes. Like our guys are in class a lot and they really have to find time amongst their schedule and our schedule to get extra shots up and watch extra film and stuff like that. So that's just the biggest difference is availability, which is really nice at the Division I level. But you've got to be strategic. And we do that the first week. We get all their schedules and we put in our locker room, like these four players are working out with us at 9 a.m. Day one, they're doing that. On Wednesday, they're watching film with us. Tuesday, 10:30, I've got the bigs. And it's just, you've got to be really organized or you're not going to be, it's going to be all over the place and people are just going to show up when they want to.
Yeah. Here's an interesting thing though. You don't maybe have the amount of time in terms of, and obviously the staff size, you got to wear more hats in terms of the things you do. The funny thing though, because now that the landscape has changed, you actually have probably more stability than the Division I guys do. In terms of guys returning.
Yeah.
Because like here, we have 14 new players on our team this year. We know six are leaving just because of either grad or senior or whatever. And then who knows after that? There's probably going to be more. but you actually probably have more stability in terms of like on a almost like a 2-year contractual type feeling of this. Right. And you still have guys move on after a year for whatever reason. Maybe they were qualifiers, right? Mm-hmm. And then they got 3 years. So that's more by their choice.
Right.
Or whatever they want to move on, you felt like they need to move on. It's mutual, however that goes. Yeah. But for the most part, the junior college level probably has more stability now than the Division I level in terms of roster stability.
For sure. Yeah. And we had five guys return. All the guys we wanted to return, they came back. And that was exciting. But at the same time, like you're saying, guys coming back at the junior college level, say a guy his freshman year has a couple low major offers that they might not want to go to that portion of the country. They'll come back their second year. They've got a big name for themselves already, and they might be able to get to a school that they really want to go to. And I think that helped. But at the Division I level, if they've got people, they've already got a couple offers here, they're gone. Don't even try to fight them on it.
That's right.
You got 3-4 people in their ear. It's
that's Division what I'm saying. Two.
Yeah. I mean, it's,
yeah,
it's hard.
No, I mean, there would be guys that would probably kill to have their five best players come back. The Division One guys, like, sure. Think about how many guys, if they knew that coming up this spring, no matter what happens, the guys that you exactly would love to come back, your top five, they're coming back. Guys would kill for that right now.
Oh, so, for sure.
So I think there's a plus and a, maybe it's considered a minus because, again, staff size and accessibility, you have to really be organized to make up for that. But
yeah,
from a roster continuity perspective, you're about as stable as it gets right now.
Yeah, which is wild.
Wild, right?
Yeah, it is. Because before, a couple of years ago, I would talk to some buddies and they're like, man, I feel for you. Like, junior college is the hardest position in the world because you've got to constantly recruit. Now it's switched where guys want the stability sometimes. But yeah, it's wild that hearing that, and it's true.
it is, man. It is flip-flop, no doubt.
Yeah. If I can change topics, I always like to tell assistants this too. And other coaches, we talked about offense and adjustments in year to year. One thing I've done that's really helped, and I've talked to a lot of other coaches, we have broken the paint up into three different sections to where, like, it's level one paint touch, level two, level three. If you get to a level one paint touch right across the elbow and you're getting a kick out, those are typically like contested. People can get to those. But if we get to a level three, which is barely above the circle, and yeah, you're scoring on that, we're getting high percentage kickouts to where they're slower closeouts, and you're typically more prone to get offensive rebounds. And so we track all that stuff, and I've talked to a lot of coaches, and they're like, Coach, I'm taking that to my head coach right now.
I'm stealing that already. Stealing that immediately.
So basically, level two would be like where the logo is, where they put the conference logo typically in the middle of the paint.
So free throw to the circle. So we don't have a logo. We're D3.
Open. The paint is clear. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I see your point, though. Basically, elbow, getting a piece.
Yes.
Is level one. The logo area is kind of level two. Then the smiley face basically is like level three.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that, man. God, that's so good.
We started doing that midway through our conference season last year, and we wouldn't have beat the number one and number two teams in the country if we didn't do that. And we track it every game, and even we're doing scouting reports now. I'm showing film a couple days ago, and I'm like, hey, they got two level three paint touches, passes the whole game. If you keep their guards in front of you, you're fine. You won't have an issue. And so now they already know that. And we're playing against the zone, and I'm like, who stopped you? You just stopped at a level one and you kicked it out. And now he's able to close out. No one stopped you. Get to a level three.
Get to a level two. Yeah. Or at least a level two. Yeah.
Exactly. Sure. Oh, exactly.
Yeah. I love that because it has value offensively and defensively.
Yeah.
So defensively, you're trying to limit the level threes.
Yes.
You're really trying to, at the worst, give up level twos. And then your chances to challenge are better with the level ones.
Yeah.
So I like it because it's got value offensively and defensively as well. Right. Oh man, that's so good. That's why me and Doug love doing this, because we're the biggest Steelers and hijackers. So I'm glad you said that, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. I was gonna say everybody's gonna see me at practice this afternoon and be like, oh wow, where'd you come up with this? Oh no, I'll give you credit.
I was streaming last night.
That's great.
One of my buddies, and he was like, yeah, we play tonight. And I said, hey, track this. And he called me the next day and he was like, coach, we only got two or three. And I was like, and what did y'all shoot from the field? And he was like, not as great as we probably should have. And I was like,
that extra dribble or whatever, that depth of getting in there, like what it does to the defense. And you're right, because that, the deeper the paint touch, the more they're scrambling.
For sure.
And then the scrambles create the offensive boards because they can't get bodies on bodies.
Yep.
People
have bad closeouts or flying out of bounds.
Yeah. Shot fake. Yeah. Parachute club 5-on-4. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that, man.
I like that a lot.
That's big.
Great advice. Great advice.
We could do a whole pod on that alone.
Yeah, we really could. We could draw up. We could break down Vanderbilt and Alabama last night and see what they did.
No doubt.
We could, for sure.
Oh, I love it.
Thank you for that. I mean, that not alone, but just everything that you've shared, because I know we always say it on here, but people who aspire to be head coaches someday will be able to take a nugget or two and form it into their own coaching philosophy, their own background, be able to put it into what they want to do. So thank you. Also, thank you, because I know today is game day, so obviously you have a lot going on, and I'm sure your head is 100 different places right now, but at least a little time to decompress and step away never hurts.
Yeah, absolutely. No, this has been great. Really enjoyed talking to you guys, and it's been a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah, no, we appreciate you, brother. And again, thank you for the Verizon coaches, just engagement and membership. And you've been a part of this a long time, so we appreciate it, man. Means a lot.
Yeah, no doubt.
Coach, good luck tonight. Hopefully we hear some good news. Definitely going to be tracking and writing down. I'm not kidding with you. That's going right in my notebook about three levels. I already put it down. So three levels of paint touches. Anybody else out there, make sure if you hear or start keeping track of those, let us know. Let Coach Cochran know. And I'm sure he'll love to hear the successes of it. But no, thank you again for being on here. And for everybody out there, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo. All you coaches, keep working and keep rising. We'll see you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. We'll